Okay, Shvi of Vayeshev, very crucial turning point in the life of Yosef. Vayihi achar hadvarim ha'ila. It was after these things. So first of all, Vayihi, we know very often is considered to be foreshadowing of negativity. It's not considered to be good. So the Al-Shulch writes that this is bad news for Yosef, because ultimately what happens here is more years of jail. I shouldn't say ultimately, that's not the right word. Before, ultimately, is what happens. Ultimately, he is freed and goes on to much better things. But right now, that's what it means, and therefore, Vayihi is the introduction. Achar hadvarim ha'ela, so there is a machlokus in the Mefarshim as to what exactly is the connotation of achar. So does this mean this was soon after? How exactly do we count the time here? So does this happen early on in his sentence? Does this happen later? So you have different interpretations of what exactly the connotations of these words are. Is there a difference between achar and achrei? I think Rashi elsewhere says that one means closely after, and another means a long time after. And in other sources you find it the opposite, you find it flipped. So there is some discussion in the Mefarshim as to what exactly that connotes. And then it goes on to say, Chotu Mashke Melech Mitzrayim Veha'ofeh La'adonehem Melech Mitzrayim. So somehow the one who is in charge, you see the terminology here is a little different. The Mashke and the Ofeh, so something is humorous about that, but how exactly they're referred to. So they sinned. So what does it mean they sinned? So the most well-known is what Rashi quotes. The language of Zenim so Zvuv, right? That here, in the case of the Saramashkim, so there was a fly that was found in the wine, and in the case of the baker, there was a rock that was found inside. So we know that chait and other connotations, chait is lashon shkaga. So that works with this interpretation, the idea being that they messed up. They didn't necessarily try to cause any problems, but they messed up, and that's the interpretation that seems to flow from what Rashi quotes. In other Mefarshim, you have different implications, perhaps significantly different implications. The Anasim ben Azil writes that they were trying to poison the king. That's pretty bad. That definitely ends you in big trouble. And the Midrashim, it sounds like they wanted to start up a romance with the king's daughter. So there are different connotations, different suggestions as to what exactly they did wrong. And clearly it does affect how you understand the whole episode here, because they are very different levels of severity. But okay, so they ended up in trouble here. Vayiktsov paro al shnei sar yisov, al sar hamashkim v'al sar ofim. So Paro gets angry at his workers here on the sar hamashkim and the sar ofim. So again, is that different? Is there different levels here? Is the sar hamashkim one thing and the mashke somebody else? There's a discussion in the Mefarshim whether there's a reason why the terminology changes. Vayitein osom b'mishmar bei sar hatabochim el bei sar sohar mekom asher Yosef asur sham. So they were put in a cell in the house of the sar hatabochim, which is the same place where Yosef was confined. So there is a whole discussion. We're not going to really get into it now, but there is a discussion. Rosham Shafal Hirsch talks about it a little bit here. Others talk about it, about the role of jail, both in classical Torah literature and also in Torah Hashkafa as a punishment. Do we believe in jail as a punishment? We know that we have a Chiv Misa, so that would seem to be worse, but is jail something which the Torah recognizes as a type of onesh? So we find some references to confinement, to imprisonment. We know it happened in the Kosher Shetzin. We find it in a few other contexts, but some argue that it's never meant to be punitive, that it's meant to be a holding cell while they figure out what to do, or maybe something else is going on, but that's never the onesh in of itself. That's a non-Jewish idea. The idea of locking somebody up as an onesh is not something that we necessarily have. That's an interesting discussion. It also comes up in Halacha Shabbos, whether you can put a criminal in jail on Shabbos. Is that an issue of tzad? Is it other things? It's an issue of Onshei Bezdin on Shabbos. It all goes to the question of what exactly the jail is supposed to accomplish. So in any event, in this context, so that's what, at least as Rav Hirsch understands, that it's meant to be a detention. It's meant to be where people are held while they figure out what's going to happen, which does fit with the rest of the story, right? So we see ultimately one is freed and one is executed, but in both cases, they're not meant to stay there forever as far as that part of the treatment. So, in any event, that's the whole discussion for a different time. What exactly is the role of jail in Hashkafa? Sicily Ezra has a truth about it. There is much written about it. Vayivko tzar ha-tabochim es Yosef yitom. Vayisharis osam vayi yamim ba-mishmar. So here, so the Sar HaTabachim, it sounds like it means he appoints Yosef to be over them, and they're there for a time in the Mishmar. Vayachnu chalom shnehem, ish chalomo v'alayla b'alayla echad, ish kipisron chalomo, hamashke v'ofa asher l'melech Mitzrayim asher asur beis ha-sohar. So here, first of all, there's a lot of language here. It seems like a lot being said, which seems to be somewhat repetitive. And also, just what is the connotation of the words that they had a dream, they both had a dream, each one had a dream on the same night, each one with the solution to the dream. So what exactly is being conveyed here is also a topic of discussion in the Mefarshim. Rashi writes that each one dreamt the interpretation. They had their own dream, and the interpretation of the other's dream. So that's how the Sar Ofim knew that the Sar HaMashkim's interpretation was correct, because he had dreamt the interpretation of the other's dream. In the Tosfos HaShalim, he writes that each got both interpretations, but they didn't know which was which. So then when they heard them given out, they knew that they were correct for that reason. Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch notes that these were very normal dreams to have. On the surface, you know, people dream about their regular life activities, so each one is really dreaming about something which seems pretty standard. So what bothered them, Kirsch writes, is the fact that they had the dreams at the same time, and that's the emphasis of the pasuk, the fact that they both had the dream the same night, and that there was this linkage apparently between the dreams. So that's what caught their attention, and that's what disturbs them. So then the pasuk continues, Vayavo Aleihem Yosef Baboker Vayarosom Vihine Zofim. So Yosef comes to them and he sees that they don't seem so happy. Vayishal Esrisei Faro Asher Ito Vimishmar Beis Adonav Lemor Madua Penechem Roim Hayom. So here I'm emphasizing all the words, because many Mefarshim pick up on this also, that why is this pasuk so long? And why is there so much included here that he asked these servants of Paro who were with him in the Mishmar or the house of his master to say to them, why is it that your face is so serious and so upset? What's going on? So the Mefarshim do pick up on that. The Ramban writes that this is all to show the Shevach of Yosef, because his relative social status at that point is going to be pretty low. And the idea that he is still able to strike up a conversation with these cabinet members, essentially, you know, these high-ranking governmental officials, is something which is interesting and noteworthy, and therefore the Torah is emphasizing that. Similarly, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has an observation here that this is about his Rachmanis, that the fact that Yosef, with all he's gone through, he can say to people, oh, why are you so sad? What can I do for you? What's on your mind? That he's expressing concern for others. The Torah wants to call attention to that. Now, again, that presumably you could have just said by saying the words, why are your face so off him? But presumably, in his understanding, he's saying that all the extra language calls your attention to the fact that there's something kind of remarkable here. Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, his comment is more elaborate, and he says essentially this is also, it's in line with the other comments, that this is a shevach to Yosef. This is telling us how great Yosef is, but it's all about his subtle understanding of the whole situation, that he was able to process everything that's going on, that here these are agents of the king and this affects his situation potentially, and he was able to read their emotional reactions and also to connect with them, that all of those aspects speak to his interpersonal intelligence, to his awareness of the situation, to his overall sophistication, and therefore all of that the Torah is calling attention to by emphasizing these words in the pasuk, which seem to be a little bit more than is necessary. Okay, so then just to go through quickly the details of the dream, and we'll have more to say in a little while. So Vayomru Elav Chalom, they said, Vayomru Elav, they said to him, Chalom Chalamnu, Uposer Enoso, we have a dream, we don't know the solution. Vayomru Elav Yosef, Halo, Elohim Pisronim, Sapru Noli. So of course this is crucial, and Devensal has a whole essay about this, but the idea that Yosef, everything is B'Shem Omro here, and the Shem Omro is the Ribono Shalom, that his point is to emphasize that he is not the one who is going to give any answers here, that he's a conduit. The answers come from the Ribono Shalom. He will do what he can to make them understood. So the Sar Hamashkim tells his dream, and he says, okay, here's what happened. I was dreaming, and there was a vine in front of me. It had three branches. Also, Nitsa. So it budded and the blossoms shot through and it brought forth grapes. The coast paro biadi, and I'm holding paro's hand. I took the grapes. El coast paro, I pushed them and pressed them into the coast of paro. Vetenis the coast al kaf paro, I gave it to paro's hand. Vayomalo Yosef zepisrono shloshes sarigim shloshes yamim. So Yosef said, okay, here's the solution. Three branches represent 3 days. Vao shloshes yamim isa faro es roshecha. In 3 days, Paro is going to lift up your head. V'hashivcha al kanecha, he's going to put you back in your position. V'nasata chos Paro biado, and you're going to put Paro's cup into his hand. Kamishpat harishon, the way it normally used to go. Asher ha'yisa mashkeyu, like he used to be his butler. Ki im zechartani itcha kasher yitavlach. V'asiso na'imadi chosed. V'hizkartani al Paro v'hizisani mibabayisazeh. So this pasuk is also crucial. What exactly is going on here? Now, I'm only going to say a little bit about this now, and then we'll finish off the Aliyah, and I'll come back and say more about it at the end of the Aliyah, because there's going to be more to say. But this pasuk is a topic of a lot of discussion, that here he's saying to him, and this seems to be a serious mistake on Yosef's part, that when things are going good for you, you shall remember me, you should think about me, and you should do a chesed for me, and you should mention me to Paro, and hopefully he will take me out of this house. So, again, I'll say, come back to this in a few minutes about some of the broader issues that are brought up here. But the Medrash, Rashi quotes the Medrash, that this got him in trouble. This added 2 more years to his sentence because of this 2 crucial words. He asked the Sar Mashkim to remember him, Zechartani and the Hizkartani. So those 2 words together, each one gets him an extra year. And that gets him in trouble.
What's the other word? Is Hizkartani?
Hizkartani.
What's the other word?
Zechartani. Right, the 2 lashonos of remembering, that gets him in trouble, it gets him 2 more years, what Chazal tell us. And we'll come back to that in a minute. But just to note here first that the Psalm Derech, Simchas Lebroid, notes that it seems like that kind of focus by counting the words, that the issue isn't in anything specific that he did beyond the language. The language somehow was the problem. Rav Schwab notes, and Rav Schwab has a brief discussion about some of the underlying issues, that he thinks the main problem was indeed about language, that he should have said that God will hopefully take me out. And to say that when Paro will take me out, to put all the power to Paro, so that's where his stumble was. the idea of Lamayan Yitov, about things are going to get better for you. So the Sat Marav writes in the Divrei Yol that what he was conveying here is that he's trying to send him the message that he sees the future, and he knows that if I get out of here, Yosef says, then things will be good for everyone. So he doesn't trust this guy that he's going to really have rachmanis on Yosef, but Yosef will be a source of bracha to the whole country, so help me get out of here so that things will be good. There is a interesting shtickle here. The Rashiv of Karen Biavner of Golvecht in the Sefer HaSufas Marachos. So he has, on this pasuk, he has a whole story, which is interesting. It says, when Napoleon was conquering, and when he had conquered parts of Russia, Lithuania, so at one point, he was welcomed by a group of noblemen who all came to praise him and basically to be machnif him, to flatter him, and to get on his good side. And the way the story is told, that Napoleon, who was a sharp guy, so he looks around the room and he says, where's the rabbi? And they're like, rabbi? I mean, there is a Jewish community here, a small one, and there's some old rabbi who's not really so in touch and is not really so involved with things. And Napoleon said, I want to see the rabbi. So they go and they bring the rabbi into the meeting, and it turns out he's a little bit more important and aware than that made him sound, but no one can figure out what he's doing in this room of the nobility and of the VIPs. And so the rabbi starts talking about this pasuk and starts talking about this whole story, and he says, it's so unusual, everything is so unusual, and it's a lengthy essay, it's a lengthy telling of the story, but just to say it in a somewhat shorter version, he says, how is this to think that people who are essentially cabinet members, or people who are so high up in the president's staff, the idea that they're going to end up in jail with somebody like Yosef at that point, so unlikely that no matter what they would do wrong, especially if it was something like a fly in the wine or a rock in the bread, it's so many steps removed from the likelihood that they would end up actually incarcerated, and that would then all of a sudden suddenly reverse itself, and that one gets executed and the other one doesn't get executed, all of a sudden just as quickly as he gets thrown in jail, he's all of a sudden back on top where he was. All of it is so extraordinary and is so unusual that you have to see that you're here for a point. You have to see that you're here for a mission. And that's what Yosef was basically saying to him. He said that, look, all of this rapid shift in fate for you back and forth, you can see that all of this, it must be that this is happening for a reason, that you're here to serve as a representative, so therefore take that seriously and speak on my behalf. So then the rabbi went on to say that Napoleon, you're a Gavaldika conqueror, there's no question, you're an unbelievable general, you're a great warrior, but as great as you are, no question, you're greater than everyone else, but clearly God is with you in what you've been able to accomplish, and you've done even more than somebody of your talents should be able to accomplish. So you must see, just like the Sar HaMashkim could be expected to see, that you are serving as an emissary here, that you're here to accomplish a mission. So you should keep that in mind, and you should try to do good things for the Jewish people. You should try to stop them from being persecuted and try to help them from their suffering and to see that as the mission. So that was essentially the story. It does seem to have resonance this week. We spoke about this a little bit yesterday, but we all know the events in America the past year, the very, very unlikely situation that brought the current president to office, and many levels far removed from anything that anyone would have predicted. And now that he has done this tremendous accomplishment of recognizing Yerushalayim, you see a little bit of a synergy in terms of the current events here, that one could imagine the speech being said to him as well, that the chances of your becoming president are perhaps similar to what we see described in both of these stories, and you should see that as a shlichus, you should see that as a mission, and should do big things. So, okay. In any event, so there's more to say about this, and we'll again come back to some of the broader questions that are brought up. In this next pasuk, so here he's telling a story. He says, "Ki gunov gunavti me'eretz ha'ivrim, v'gam po lo asisi muma, ki samu osi babor." So he says, "I was kidnapped, and I was taken from the Eretz Ha'ivrim, and even here I didn't do anything. So I shouldn't have been brought here in the first place. And even here I didn't do anything wrong, and here I am. I'm in a pit." So what's interesting about this pasuk? You know what all the mafreshim pick up on? It's also a little bit relevant to current events. Eretz Ha'ivrim? Was there Israel yet? Was there Eretz Yisrael yet? Was there a Jewish government? The idea that it's already known as the Eretz Ha'ivrim, that's something that Mefarshim try to figure out, that seems a little bit premature. Was that really the reputation? The Rambam talks about this a little bit in Mishneh Torah and Hilchos Avodas Kochavim in the beginning. So Yaakov Kamenetsky discusses this, and he has a whole explanation where he says that all the people who were connected to the Avos were known as Ivrim, that whatever the source of the word Ivri is, but that is a couple of possibilities. But Avram is known as Ivri, and that everyone who was connected to him became known by that idea, and then also it became a language for people who came from over there and now are somewhere else and are dislocated were known as the Ivrim. Rav Shamshon Fal Hirsch, in a different vein, so he says that it must be that other clans around the world thought that the Jews were so important that they identified the whole land with them, even if they were not yet a full-fledged nation. Which that idea of disproportionate importance is also something that I think we've seen this week, and many commenting just how, you know, this idea of recognizing the capital of such a tiny country, how that can be considered such a significant event on the world scale, on the world stage, is again something that we continuously take note of. Okay, so now to just continue. So we go to the next stream. Vayar sar ofen ki tov pasar. Vayomer el Yosef afani b'chalami v'nei shlosha sale chori al roshi. So here he starts to tell his dream, and you see also he says ki tov pasar, that he saw the interpretation was good. So we addressed that a few minutes ago. I had to know the interpretation was good, because apparently he had seen in his own dream either the other interpretation or both interpretations, but he had enough experience to recognize that it was a good interpretation. The bird is eating it. Okay, here's the story. Three baskets mean 3 days. It must be very hard to tell somebody that this is the interpretation. Somebody was telling me this week, I don't remember where he saw this, but the difference in the formulation, that here it says Vayan Yosef Vayomer, and it doesn't say that by the Sar HaMashkin, and that's because he was delivering such a difficult message. So when it came to the Sar HaMashkin, he just said, oh yeah, here's what it means. And then when it came to the Sar HaOfim, he tried to avoid looking him in the eye, tried to avoid telling him what the message was. So Sarah Ofim must have said to him, come on, tell me what's going on, what's the story? And so ultimately he answers him, Vayan. He had to respond because he had to be pushed to say what was going on. Okay, so that's bad news. So then the next pasuk says, V'yi b'yom ha'shlishi, yom hu'ledes esparo, v'yas mishte l'chalavada, v'yisa esrosh sar ha'mashkin, v'yas rosh sar ha'ofim b'sol chavada. So indeed, it happens on the third day. It was the birthday of Paro. So here, as we mentioned, very important synergy that our very devoted Shir assistant made sure to have a birthday this week in order to allow to illustrate this one reference of a birthday in the whole Torah. And many point out, for good or for bad, that seems a little bit interesting, that the one reference to a birthday is for a non-Jew. I remember hearing one teacher once say that that's the reason we should celebrate English birthdays rather than Hebrew birthdays. But you should celebrate English birthdays because the only birthday that's mentioned is of a non-Jewish individual. So, okay, I think he meant that as a joke. But it does raise the question of the role of birthday celebrations in Halacha and Hashkafa. Now, there is a lot written about this. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, most notably, was famous in recent generations, was famous for emphasizing the birthday as a day of celebration, a day of Hodah, you know, perhaps a day Shenatzel Ones, a day that you were created. And so there is a number of discussions about it. Certain birthdays have particular significance. But if you want to find some discussions, we won't go into great detail, but in the Sefer Kamat Dar Lukhi that we've mentioned a few occasions, Rabbi Tzvi Reisman has an essay about it in this week's Parsha, and Rav Yochanan Dvorkis in one of his farm, he has a number of his farm in the Parsha, one of his farm, he talks about birthdays and birthday celebrations in connection with this. And there is also a Sefer, forgetting the title, for Zichron Shlomo, I think it's called, that if you look in the library, there's a Sefer in memory of Rabbi Shlomo Kalish, who was a student of the Avnei Nezer. I think it's called Zichron Shlomo. And it was edited by the incredibly prolific Rabbi David Mandelbaum. I think we've mentioned him this year. So his birthday was Asar B'Teves. So because of that, there's a whole kuntras on Asar B'Teves, which is also not so far off. There's a whole kuntras on Asar B'Teves in this book, and because of his birthday being on Asar B'Teves, and then, which seems a little bit of a stretch, I guess, because he had a birthday, so there's a whole kuntras on birthdays, but you could say that probably applies to a few other people also. But once he was giving a kuntras on Asar B'Teves, he has a kuntras on birthdays also. So if you look in the Sefer Zichron Shlomo, there's a lot written about birthdays, how to celebrate them, what do they mean halachically. Sorry?
What did you do with
I believe the Sefer, he's written many Sfarim, edited many Sfarim. I believe the Sefer is called Zichron Shlomo, if I remember correctly. If it's not the right title, it's the Sefer Zikaron for Shlomo Kalish. Okay. So, in any event, there's a lot to be said about birthdays. So, Vayoshev Esar Hamashkim Amashkeyu Vayitein HaKos LaKaf Baro. So, the good news for the Sar Mashkim that happened, V'Esar Ofim Tala Kasher Paso Lehem Yosef. And the bad news for the Sar Ofim also happened. And then the last pasuk ends on this ominous note. V'lo zachar sar hamashkim es Yosef. V'yishkachehu. And he did not remember Yosef, and he forgot him. So here, just to discuss the few minutes that we have. So, you know, this is a difficult topic. This is a very difficult sugya to understand, because, as we mentioned from a few pasukim before, so Chazal have a tradition that Yosef was punished. That Yosef, because he asked for help from this guy, so he ends up with 2 more years on his sentence. And it's a difficult idea, because we are taught that hishtadlus is important, that we're supposed to make efforts, al pi derech hateva, to address our needs. And why is that wrong? What's the problem? What did Yosef do? This was something, as mentioned, Rav Schwab in his comments on this pasuk, he raises this issue. And it's understandably a difficult point. So there is a lengthy essay about this, again, by the Rashiv Karen Biavna and the Sufos Marachos in this parsha. And it's going to be a difficult point even after you analyze it. It's hard to really have a very clear path here, but a couple of the points that he makes is that, first of all, this is really a side point, but it's just interesting also. So clearly Yosef is the master of Bitacha, right? He is the one who is the ultimate role model in Bitacha throughout. So here, there's a theme that we find sometimes in Shast and in Chumash and elsewhere, that stavka, people who are very, very superior in a certain trait, that when they make one stumble in that area, they get punished much more severely than others do. There's a Gemara like that, the end of Makkos, that was Daf Yomi, and not so long ago, that you find this theme coming up a few times, that people, davka, who are the most careful, when they stumble, it gets punished in a disproportionate way. So that's one of the things that seems to be happening here, that Yosef, the master of Bitachon, he makes a mistake in the area of Bitachon, and it ends up costing him 2 years. But what exactly is the nature of the issue? What was the mistake? So that's still a little challenging. As you know, it's Hashem runs the world, but he does so in a way that is kind of hidden in Teva. So it parallels things that seem to be cause and effect, and therefore we are encouraged to make a hishtadlus, as a hechitimsa, to go through the effort. We go to work, we do what we need, we need to stay healthy and to accomplish other primary needs. And that's the hechitimsa in order for God to bring his bracha. The Chazon Ish in Emuna B'Tochen, Rav Shiva quotes this, others quote this as well. This is in Dalet Vav of Emuna B'Tochen. If you want to look it up, he talks about this. I think there's an English version of Emuna B'Tochen also, right? Somebody translated it into English, so you could look either place. That he writes that Yosef thought that, okay, he has to help things along, that's normal hishtadlus, and that therefore if he would convey to this Tsar, to the Tsar HaMashkim, this theme of Hakaras HaTov, then that would be productive as a hishtadlus. And that was a reasonable thing to think, said the Chazon Ish, if he was talking to a person who could be expected to respect Hakaras HaTov. But the type of guy this person was, it wasn't too likely that he has any respect for that value. So essentially, this was kind of a useless effort, as we see that he forgot him, although not forever, which is also something to try to figure out. But he forgot him for a while. So that message, perhaps that's the issue, because putting his faith not just in a human, but in a human who wasn't going to be likely to do anything. So that was an act of yeish more. That's an act of giving up. That's not really an act of hishtadlus. That was how the Chazon Ish explained, and the Rosh Yeshiva quotes him and discusses him in the context of the pasuk. The pasuk in Tehillim that's quoted here is Ashrei Hagever Asher Sam Hashem Miftocho. So fortunate is the person who places his faith in God. V'lofana El Rehavim, and they don't turn to people who are haughty, to people who are arrogant. So the Chazal understand that Ashrei Hagever Asher Sam Hashem Miftocho, that's Yosef, and the next part is also him, that he stumbled by putting his faith in these haughty people. So the idea of calling them Rehavim, that's how the Chazon Ish was essentially understanding. This is somebody who's not going to do anything anyway. So to put his faith in him, that was a act of yeish rather than hishtadlus. And that's not something that fits in with our normal theme of hishtadlus. It's also interesting that you can maybe, this I'm just adding in, you can maybe draw a little bit of a parallel here, that there's clearly a delicate balance. Right? And what is the takeaway for us from this whole story of proper hishtadlus, improper hishtadlus, bitachon, etc.? So I think hitting the exact point for us, knowing where this exact middle is going to be a challenge, figuring out what exactly the takeaway is. But there are certain things that we can take away from the story. And how do you mix, how do you balance the bitachon hishtadlus equation? So one is we can emphasize the bitachon part of it, which is something that will come out in how we do certain things, such as tefillah and the like. So that part we can pay attention to. And also in terms of the hishtadlus, so yes, it's going to be hard to know exactly where the hishtadlus point, sweet spot really is, but we can figure out that anything that is inappropriate, anything that is wrong, we can never justify as saying, well, we have to do hishtadlus. So for example, anything that would be dishonest, anybody who says, well, I have to make dishonest decisions in business in order to keep my yeshiva going, the like, so that's not hishtadlus. That's not going to, that's going to be a lack of faith by its very definition, because you know that's clearly not what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do. And it's interesting because there are some areas of halacha which do require you sometimes making a trade-off and saying, okay, normally I'm not supposed to do this, but here it's necessary. But those are very, very tricky judgment calls. So for example, one of them is in the area of Lashon Hara. And when it comes to Lashon Hara, so normally we're not supposed to disparage people, but we are supposed to say what's needed to be said if it's going to save the day. So here, that is a situation. It seems to be different from saying we should make a corrupt business decision to save yeshiva, but because the halacha does recognize that that is a trade-off that exists, but it has to be made very, very carefully, because there you really need to have the proper bitachon to know, okay, I have to take a step in order to bring about the right result, but I have to really recognize that Kadosh Baruch Hu is running the world, and I do what I need to do and no more. So it's just interesting, this might be shot in the Medrash, because the Medrash in Shmos, Shmos Rabbah, connects this story to, I mean, you don't even need the Medrash because you could find some other places, but it connects this to the Pasuk in Mishlei. The Pasuk says, "V'dvar shfasayim ach l'machzor," that these matters of the lips can become just something that is necessary. And it says that Yosef was supposed to be in jail only for 10 years. Why 10 years? Because he was Motzi Diba in the beginning of the parasha, is Motzi Diba on his 10 brothers. And extra two for this. So they seem to be completely unrelated actions, right? The Motzi Diba and this, the 1 year each for each of these crimes, 10 brothers in two words here, it's interesting they're being lumped together because they don't seem to have any connection. But maybe they do. Maybe that's the whole point, that Yosef's Diba about his brothers is a controversial issue. It sounds like he was speaking Lashon Hara about them. So many assume that Yosef must have been justified, must have been Latoelis, right? Because what was Yosef's last name? Hatzadik, right? So presumably, if he was speaking Lashon Hara, it must have been justified. There's a fascinating Dvar Torah I quote often from the Sefer Afikayam. You could find it printed in the beginning of the second Chelek, where he has a Dvar Torah in the Pesukim in the beginning of the Parsha to explain how all the klolim of Lashon Hara Latoelis can be derived from Yosef, because the assumption is that he was justified. And others are not so impressed. Others, like the Chafetz Chaim, wonder if Yosef was totally justified. So one could argue that this really does all fit under a heading here, that the question of bitachon, it also goes to how much do you think, okay, everything's up to me to solve all the problems of the world, and even if that means I have to compromise on halachic values and on moral values, well, it's my job to save the world. So sometimes we say, no, it's not your job. You have to have bitachon in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that means that you do the hishtadlus that is normal and expected, but by definition, it's not going to involve something that's going to compromise your moral character. So the trade-off in when to speak Lashon Hara and when not is a very, very tricky question. And maybe that's the suggestion, that that's the Tzad HaShavi here, that just as he is accused of not having the proper balance of hishtadlus versus bitachon with his comments to the Sar HaMashkim, so too, that was also the core of his speech about the brothers. He thinks, okay, my brothers are misbehaving, it's my job to save the world and to go tell on them. And maybe not so much, maybe a little more bitachon there, recognize that yes, you have to do your hishtadlus, but your hishtadlus did not require you to speak badly about your 10 brothers. And perhaps that's the Tzad HaShava between these themes. Maybe. But there's more to say about this point. And recently, Rav Asher Weiss Shlita came out with a sefer on the topic of Emunah Bitachon just in the past few months. He came out with such a sefer. And as you'd expect, he has a letter there in that sefer where he talks about these issues and specifically about the Yosef question, about what's being messaged here at the end of this parasha. And he notes a few points. He notes about the whole question about the balance and how it's hard for us to really know exactly where that balance is, where exactly you hit that point where your hishtadlus is the appropriate hishtadlus. And he notes that the Ramban comments that the Gemara says in Bava Kamma that we know that refuah is a big value in Judaism. We're all looking proud of our son, the doctor. So the Gemara in Bava Kamma says, based on the pasuk in Mishpatim, "V'rapo yirape mikan sheyesh rishus l'rofe l'rapos," that the pasuk "V'rapo yirape" tells us that there is rishus for the doctor to heal. So we've shown and discussed, well, of course, why shouldn't there be rishus? And we point out various reasons, maybe a chosh mishpah reason, and maybe you think, what right do I have to cut someone up or to do actions that might otherwise be considered chavala if it's not because of a heter based on refuah? And others address it more hashkafically, that maybe a person would say, well, if God wants him to be sick, then it's God's job to heal him. Why should I undermine God's will by healing somebody who's sick. So we see, no, that kanshiyas rishus l'rofei l'rapos. So the Ramban discusses, why do you say rishus? We should say it's a chiyuv. We should say it's an obligation to for rofei l'rapos. So the Ramban writes that if a person was really a perfect tzaddik and was totally living in this unbelievable level of hashgacha pratis, so then maybe it wouldn't be necessary. But for the rest of us, it's necessary. So we phrase it as a rishus rather than as a chiyuv. But then the Sfarim go on to say that b'zman hazeh, so nobody's living on that level, so for all of us, a chiyuv. So we effectively should pursue medical treatment as a chiyuv. The only question is, why does the Gemara use the language of Rishus? Because theoretically there could have been a different balance between Hishtadlis and Bitachon for people on a certain level. But we assume that we're not on that level, so we're not Christian scientists. We put a great emphasis on pursuing the Derech HaTeva of medical care, and it was always at least a Rishus, and to say now it's also a Chiyuv, because we assume that that's included in our Hishtadlis. And there's a very important passage which the Gemara says in Maseches Nidah and Daf Ayin, where it discusses there as well, that the Gemara says, okay, where it has basically two approaches. A person wants to get a parnasa, a person wants to make a living, so what should he do? So the Gemara says, well, he should be nosiv and nosin b'yamunah, he should do business honestly, and he should do a lot of business so that he'll make a lot of money. And then the Gemara says he should be mevakesh misha osho shalom. He should go to the source of all wealth. He should go to the Ribono Shel Olam, and he should ask him for help. He should ask him for parnasa. And the Gemara ultimately says about these two tracks here, says ha b'lo ha b'lo sagi, that one without the other is not going to work. So you actually do the business and you ask God for help, and that's the recipe there. So it seems like there's the Hishtadlus track and there's the Bitachon track, and you need to emphasize both, and that's how it happens. But it's interesting that on the Hishtadlus track, so the Gra takes out the word about being marbe b'schara, about doing a lot of effort, and he just leaves nosim and nosim b'yamuna. And the Meiri writes over there also that that's the Iker Hishtadlus of nosim and nosim b'yamuna. So that corresponds to what we said before, that the clue to your Hishtadlus, you want to know your Hishtadlus is right, we're not so capable of figuring out the exact spot of where it should be, but we can tell you that if it's not legitimate, then it's not the appropriate Hishtadlus. That if it's you're being doing your business dishonestly and saying this is what I need to do to stay afloat, that's not what the Kaddish Baruch Hu wants from you. That much you can know. So however, the exact amount of business you need to be doing, that's harder to figure out. But there should be no sin b'yamuna. That much we can say with confidence, that is a part of what the Hishtadlus means. And I'll just close by noting that the Beis HaLevi in Parshas Miketz, commenting on this story also, so the Beis HaLevi has an interesting perspective where he says that really, you know, ideally we could all live lives on a total bitachon level, but we do need this kli of Hishtadlus. And sometimes a little more Hishtadlus is good, because it helps you appreciate the bitachon, it helps you have more bitachon. Once you put in a little more hishtadlus, you're in a position to strengthen your bitachon. And by doing so that will increase that midah, and therefore it's worthwhile, even though too much can be counterproductive, and too much, like we see being alleged against Yosef, ends up undermining the bitachon and therefore making you pay a bigger price, because it becomes counterproductive and essentially backfires. But this idea of the hishtadlus strengthening your bitachon, so one could also add that presumably that has to do with your attitude, that you say, okay, so really if I become rich, it's because the Kaddish Baruch Hu makes me rich. Oh, but maybe it's not just that. Maybe it's also I'm a very sharp businessman and I'm very talented, and that's what's going to make me rich. So, yeah, but if you think also, who made you so sharp and who made you so talented? So the resources that you have, that you're using for your hishtadlus, whatever it is, whether it's the capital income you already have, or whether it's your business acumen, or whether it's your connections, whatever they are, all of them are there because, or your Sisyphus education, all of it is there because the Kaddish Baruch Hu made it available to you. So therefore, if you look at it with that attitude, so then for sure it's going to strengthen your bitachon. You're saying that the kelim that I have for hishtadlus themselves are also tools that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me. I didn't make them out of nowhere. So that's also something that for sure will help the overall bitachon. So here we're not even addressing the real issue, though. What does bitachon mean? Because bitachon, we know, it doesn't mean that whatever you want is going to happen. It doesn't mean that whatever you think is best is going to necessarily manifest itself. So that's also a more subtle point. That's something that Chazanish discusses. So we're not really giving you enough space now, but just in one sentence, you know, presumably bitachon doesn't necessarily mean that whatever you want is going to happen, but that what does happen is Mehashem and is therefore good by definition, even if we're not able to perceive it as such, and that's perhaps the first step. All right, well, I wish you a Shabbos that you're able to perceive as good in all ways, both overtly and subtly, and I look forward to seeing you on Sunday, and first we'll daven mincha and express our bitachon in that way. So who wants to daven for us? Mm-hmm.